It's Saturday, September 16th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, we take calls, and of course, we do some geek news.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our show, we're just covering the technology of the week. We got Sean and John here. And of course, we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments on technology during the second half of the show. The numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks John Tracy, technical support engineer at Surf Control, and as every week, Sean Cleland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning.
Good morning. Before we, in the second half of the show, we'll be taking people's calls, like we also do pretty regularly on Geek Speak. Stop squeaking your chair. And but first, let's do geek news, okay? So, Sean, I'd like to start with you.
Good morning, again.
Yeah, thanks. It has been a good morning, actually. Last night was a horrible time for me at work. I, 4 o'clock in the day, realized that the server that I've got all these student accounts on, I work at UCSC, I've got an LDAP server running. It's an Apple machine, Open Directory, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I decided to edit the thing to make it so that not everyone in the world can query the thing for email addresses.
And now everyone knows they can query it.
Well, no, now it doesn't exist because... So I'm looking at the machine, I'm like, oh, well, maybe if I just change this one access control item, I'll make it so that people that are non-authorized can't access it. That's exactly what I want. Unfortunately, I didn't use the word auth, I used the word none, which meant that no users could read my Open Directory, and it was off. Not even the server could read the Open Directory. I totally destroyed it. I erased all my user accounts. Very embarrassing. So I spent hours working.
There must be some way to work through that.
Yeah, but you know, after 3 hours, I'm like, I've got 25 users, something like that. I can recreate it and ask them all to change their password.
Oh, I thought there were hundreds.
If there were hundreds, I'd still be at work.
Right.
And email's not affected, so people can't change the website. Anyway, so this morning, the day is a brighter day. I don't feel as stressed about it. I'm okay. So, but tell me some news for the week.
Well, every 6 months or so, Seagate breaks another record. We report on this so many times.
I know. Last week, you were leaving my house late at night. We were gaming, and you said, I just like Seagate. I think they're a great company. I'm like, really? You actually, like, normally you're kind of like, but Seagate, there's something familiar about it. You know, it's in Scotts Valley.
They're always pushing their R&D harder and harder. And it's one of those areas where with processors, yeah, they come out, they're faster, but not a lot of people understand much about that.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to understand
and
what's going on there.
It's hard to quantify it to
some degree. Yes, it's hard to quantify it. And with a hard drive, it's really pretty easy.
And Seagate, of course, is a major manufacturer of hard drives.
So, yes, they broke the world record and are able to store 420 gigabits per square inch of data.
Oh, that's a dense data storage.
So what does that mean to you? Well, they did this using a perpendicular recording technology when they laid the bits down,
the magnetic domains are standing on the end instead of
which is just blows
down.
My mind to think about. How do you write something from the bottom up and pack it together in with a, you know,
I think it's magnets and magic. Okay, go on.
So what does this mean for hard drive capacity? So 1 and 1.8 inch electronic drives.
Are those the ones that go in like cameras and stuff?
Cameras and things. Expect those to reach anywhere up from 40 gig to 275 gigabytes of data.
Okay, but I never buy those things. So how about like laptop?
Laptop notebook drive, which is the 2.5 inch drive, could reach capacities of 500 gigabytes.
Wow.
Half a terabyte. And desktop, 3.5-inch desktop.
Now, this is the one that we all use. These are the ones that right now you can buy 500 gig ones.
Those could reach capacities of nearly 2.5 terabytes.
Yes, thank you, doctor.
At 2.5 terabytes capacity...
Yeah, what does that really mean? Put that in, you know, that's a large drive.
It means 41,650 hours of music can be stored.
41,000 hours of music. How many years of music? That's ridiculous. You can't even use that much music.
800,000 digital photographs.
See, I need that.
I should have. Yeah, right.
I checked
4,000 hours of digital video and 1,250 video games, which I just think is amazing. Like, yeah, how many video games could we store on this? Like, there are
how
that many
movies? Does he have a list for how many movies?
They just say 4,000 hours of digital video.
4,000 hours. So
and they're hoping
two,
that,
basically.
That drives based on these new densities will emerge by 2009.
So Sean, I remember in the past when we were talking about that 2-gig envelope for a hard drive that, well, that operating system can't handle it and this is a problem. Can like Vista or even XP handle a 2.5-gig drive?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Okay. So it's not a problem?
I'm pretty sure it has to do with the file system.
Uh-huh.
And the current 32-bit Windows file system can handle.
What about on Mac, John?
Petabytes, I think.
I don't know what the upper limit is on Mac, but I don't think it'd have a problem with 2.5 terabytes. I don't think. I don't know.
But the thing is, what you want to do with 2.5 terabytes is you want to get three of them and get a RAID. So you get a 5-gig redundant storage device. Or five terabytes.
Terabytes.
Speaking of tera, which of
course...
I
already have a terabyte. NAS device.
Just to let you know.
We'll have a review of it up on the GeekSpeak site.
Yeah, one day. Yeah, got the tools ready. So.
Just to let you know, 41,650 hours, that's about 4.75 years of
music. So if you listen to music for 4 years with this drive.
4.75 years. 4.75 years.
Almost 5 years, you would not hear the same song again.
That's right.
Except that most CDs, compilations, stuff have songs that repeat and music. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if you could find that much music.
Well, how many hours do you think are in this room?
There's we're surrounded 10, by a lot
CDs
of hours.
In here.
Okay,
an hour.
Okay, good point.
So that's 10,000 hours right in here. No, it's actually probably. What do you guys think? Guess on how many CDs? I never think about that. There's music surrounds us, and we sit here and talk for an hour every week. Kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. It's a lot of music around.
So we're just talking about terabytes, and of course, tera comes from, I would assume, Earth. The term tera means Earth, right? I don't know how that relates to the size, but. With that.
Really
I'm stretching.
Reaching.
I'm stretching here really hard.
Hurt yourself.
So, tera.
1 million gigabytes.
So now I'll go and say, Terra, of course, Earth is a planet like other planets in our solar system. We currently, I think as the last count, have 8 planets. John, what's up with Pluto?
Pluto? What is this Pluto you speak of?
It was a planet I was taught. You know,
Pluto, the planet formerly known as Pluto.
Or the body formerly known as Pluto,
which is now a dwarf planet, has been given a new designation.
Okay, I'll let you tell you that in a second. I gotta say something about Pluto. So Sean's wife Maggie goes out last week and buys mobiles and charts and posters that have Pluto in it, so that we have a space paraphernalia that includes the planet. That's how geeky we all are. I want to hold on to Pluto.
It's called nostalgia.
Nostalgia.
Even better, if you can find a map or anything that references UB 2113, I think it is. If you can find one that references 2003 UB313, the planet otherwise known as Xena.
Uh-huh.
If you can find any with the word Xena in it, get those. Those are probably going to be worth something because it wasn't Xena for very long.
Okay, so what
it's
happened?
Got a new
to,
name also.
Sorry, I was going to. So what happened to Pluto?
Okay, Pluto's been dubbed asteroid number 134340.
It's got such a nice ring to it.
So when you're doing the little planet song, insert that instead of Pluto.
But normally when you do the planet song, you actually have like a. You've got a what is that called when you've got a word that's made up of the acronyms? A mnemonic?
Yeah.
A mnemonic device. So now you've got to have a mnemonic device with a number in it? Okay, any case.
It's not a planet, so you don't have to worry about it.
All right, good.
And the planet Xena is now called Eris.
Eris.
The goddess of strife and it's in the Roman pantheon. It's called Discordia.
Well, that fits because all these planets, the ones we have right now are based off of Greek.
Actually, she was the sister of Ares.
Eris is the sister. Full god or like a, you know, it doesn't really matter that much.
Goddess,
but
yeah.
The question I have is why is it apropos for the situation?
Well,
why is Xena or the thing Eris. We used to call Xena, which is now just another asteroid now called Eris, why does that strife? What has it done that's caused strife?
What has the planet done?
What has that body existence done to cause strife? You explained this before the show, and I was trying to figure it out, so now I kind of get it. So I'm
well, let's not get into that whole explanation of what happened.
Yeah, let's not get into the Trojan Wars.
But basically...
Basically, Eros was responsible for the Trojan Wars.
No, don't describe it. Describe the planet situation.
Right, yeah, I am. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, if we hadn't found any planets beyond Pluto, Pluto would have remained a planet. We started finding trans-Neptunian objects outside of Neptune's orbit. Pluto is one of those.
Uh-huh.
We found the planet formerly known as Xena, now called Eris. Well,
and that was the first
planet.
One of those we found.
That was the first one of those
that
we found.
That said, hey, if Pluto's a planet, then so is this new one, Xena.
Exactly. Which was okay. It's like 10 planets. Great.
But then we found a bunch more.
Then they think they found at least 12 more.
Okay.
Possibly 53 more.
And so then people said, we got to ratchet it down, and that's how Pluto lost its status.
Well, yeah, people started saying, we need a definitive definition of what planet
right.
is. And there hasn't been one up to this point, which if you think about it, is kind of weird.
Yeah, and we've went through that definition a couple weeks ago. Is there some change? Because I've heard some news stories that there's been up in arms. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely movement afoot to try to get Pluto grandfathered in as a planet. It accounts for everyone except Pluto. Pluto special.
Okay, that's just dumb.
Thank you. And the next news story, Sean.
Grandfathered in? Let's throw the science away because it feels good.
It's what our country does.
So Microsoft launched its Zune player. Zune is the answer to iPod. Microsoft's answer to the iPod.
So it's a portable media player?
It is. It's a portable media player. Comes in black, white, or tan.
I can get a tan one?
Black, white, or brown.
Is that brown or beige?
I guess it's more brown. It features a 30-gig hard drive, 802.11bng wireless connectivity, a USB 2.0 interface, and a what they call bright 3-inch LCD video screen that works in both portrait and landscape modes. It also includes an FM tuner with advanced tuning capabilities that allow you to see the name of the song being played as long as the station that's broadcasting it uses a frequency that supports radio broadcast data standard signal. Which is kind of cool.
RDS, yeah.
RBDS.
Yes, sorry. Mr. RBDS. KOSP does RBDS, but we do not do per song because we don't program our entire music line. We have like really good music professionals that come in and play from their own collection and from our collection. So we can't do that as automatically as some stations. But we have better music, I would say, than these pre-programmed. But anyway, that's just a little plug for my favorite station.
So does the Zune support video?
It does indeed support video. It supports WMV, MPEG-4, and H.264 formats.
And MP3, I'm assuming.
It does support for audio. It supports WMA, MP3, and AAC audio formats. And it supports JPEG for viewing pictures. As I said, it's wireless. So if you've got two of these in vicinity of each other, you can use Zune-to-Zune music sharing, where you can share selected songs, recordings, playlists, pictures, with other Zune devices that are in range.
I guess
shared songs can be listened to up to 3 times over the course of 3 days, and then can be later purchased in Zune Marketplace.
Which is Microsoft's store.
What is it using for its wireless connection?
802.11b.
802.11b.
Oh, so it's a true...
Okay. And G.
Which means you could probably sync through that? You think you could sync through it?
Yeah, it's a good... I don't know.
I hope you can turn that off, because I think that having a transmitting antenna on a portable device like that, when you don't use it very often,
already music protection built in. It's not like someone's going to steal your songs.
I'm talking about battery life. When I use my laptop, internet connection, I turn my Wi-Fi off because it burns power.
It will burn power, that's for sure. So Zune Marketplace is Microsoft's replacement of iTunes.
Well, Microsoft's competition to iTunes. Okay, and is that up already? Can you buy songs?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But you can buy them individually or in bulk using a flat fee based subscription called Zune Pass.
Oh, that's a good idea. So you can basically say, I want all songs for Pirate of
Play. And Zune Marketplace only runs on Windows XP and requires Service Pack 2 and a high-speed internet connection.
Right on. Okay, so...
There it is.
Sean, that sounds cool. Why don't we get one of these products? We haven't been on top of getting these kinds of devices.
Well, you make money, go buy one.
No, I'm not going to buy one, no. Because I love my iPod. There's no reason for me to switch. But if I get one for free, try it out, and like it, I'll definitely talk about it on air and ship it back.
We should do a comparison between it and the new iPods.
I think, Sean, since you love Microsoft so much, you should buy one.
I do?
Yeah, don't you? No?
Yeah, I like Microsoft.
Is it more, or is it more apathetical to Apple?
You know, like I said, I think the Apple OS, it looks very intriguing. I just, you know, I like PC hardware.
I appreciate you not letting me pigeonhole you. Thank you. Let's go on to the next news story, John.
I'm going to talk more about the Zune. Do you know if it's going to have gaming?
Okay, I need to see a picture. Gosh.
It's not a pretty thing. I did see a picture of it in landscape mode where they had it turned sideways so that the wheel that is kind of iPod-like wheel, that navigation wheel, was being used as a game controller. I swear I saw a game on the device, but I don't know for sure.
It's wireless, and it has gaming. I mean, you know, you've got competition for
that's
the PSP.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting game when Boy. I like the FM tuner, of course, because I like to listen to FM, but I think that's interesting. I'm sure it uses the headset for the
But you know, my iRiver has all of this
already. It's been around and yours has been out for years. You've had
my
iRiver
doesn't
years.
Have wireless, but that's okay.
You've had it for 3 years, right?
I was able to put the Korean firmware on it, and I can watch MPEG video.
So what's
it's hacked, but it works.
Yeah, what's iRiver doing? I mean, what's the company that does that?
iRiver.
It's its own company. So what are they doing?
My iRiver's called an H300. It's got a 30-gig hard drive. It was out before iPod.
Yeah, it's been out for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know how well they're doing.
It wasn't out before the iPod, but it was around the same time as the early iPods.
I think it was.
No, it wasn't out before wasn't the iPod. It? No, because we were comparing it with my old first-generation iPod, which was old at that time.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and so since we're talking about iPods and MP3 players and portable media devices, Apple released a whole slew of new versions of iPods. The one that I think is the most different from what they already had. You know, bigger sizes, same prices, do more things, blah, blah, blah. Of course, they also have movies that you can buy online. And they have a new product that's going to come out. We'll talk about that later on when they actually release it. But what they did do is the new Shuffle, the old Shuffle, which is this MP3 player that you can basically randomize your play songs, and there's no hard drive, so it's easy. It's good to run with.
It's about the size of 4 sticks of gum stacked together.
Yeah. The new one is the size of a pack of matches, like a normal pack of matches, and it clips. It's got an auto clip into it.
Oh.
So you clip it onto your clothes and run with it. It's pretty cool.
So yeah, interesting.
And then, you know, Apple released some other stuff too, but nothing that was amazing. New iTunes, so it's kind of cool on some of the visuals, but it also feels to me like Apple's kind of trying to suck you into buying stuff at their store.
I think the biggest news was that Apple didn't release their video player. It's an iPod update that's a video player. It's got a huge screen, touch screen. So instead of a quick click wheel and all of that, that entire thing is taken up by a screen.
And you know this exists how? Because Apple's pretty closed-minded about things like this.
I can't say how.
Do you have a friend? Or are you just reading the tabloids?
No. It's not from the tabloids.
Okay, so it's real.
Yeah.
You sure it's real?
Yes. Yes. Right.
Are you still sore at Apple for not hiring you way back when you worked as a contractor?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, actually, it's...
We shouldn't talk about it.
There have been a lot of patents.
It's trade secrets. You're going to get a
No, I'm not going to get anyone in trouble.
Okay.
They've had patents out. Everyone knows they've had patents for a touchscreen for a while. And there have been, things have slipped through. But it's not, if someone was to know an engineer that worked at Apple who's been really busy lately, that's the project they've probably been working on.
They're defending their pod name. They're going after anyone that uses the word pod in their
product. Thinking of naming GeekSpeak to be
Did
pod
you hear about
something.
That? Pod Speak.
You can't take pod. I mean, come on.
They are.
All right, fine. I guess they have enough money. Okay.
So I have to mention this, or Dee Dee will be very upset, because I think made the wiki page that we work from to begin with, and she just put this up here. Nintendo's Wii, W-I-E, W-I-I, Wii, their new gaming console, will be launching on November 19th.
Okay. Well, after November 19th, we'll talk all about it. All right. So, any more news stories?
What's cool about the Wii is remote control.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, let's talk about it.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
So, what's interesting is,
it's not released yet, and we've talked about it before. So, is there anything new about it that's, do you know?
The price.
The price is dropped or increased?
You want me to say what it is?
Sure, say the price.
It'll be $250. What's interesting is it will not come with a DVD player.
Oh.
So they expect this to be a home media center type device where you have channels, where you can do all kinds of things. You can pick the games to play, get news, weather, view and send photos, all that kind of stuff. But although you can watch TV through it, I think, you can't watch a DVD movie. I guess Nintendo feels that enough people already have DVD players and... they needed to cut costs. So games may or may not be region locked like the Xbox 360. So that's nice that developers have a choice. But like I said, the Wii controller, you hold it in your hand. It's got some sort of a gyroscope built in. Nintendo says it's intuitive. Anybody can use it. It's really easy to pick up and just use. To give an example, they said with Wii Sports Tennis game, you can swing the Wii remote like a tennis racket to hit the ball, which is kind of interesting, as in real life. And you can even add a top spin or a slice by angling your hand and wrist, just like you would in a real match. So I just can't wait to see people playing a Wii. I mean, very interactive.
Yeah, but do you want to be in a situation where you have two people playing it, swinging these things around? I mean, it seems like it's a dangerous thing.
You know, why not? It gets the kids off of their butt. And they're jumping around the room, you know? We'll I don't know.
Quinn kind of does.
I want to see Dee Dee playing her Wii, that's all. It's got to be, that'd be a lot of fun.
One other interesting thing about the Wii, Nintendo's making money on the console when they sell it.
Even at this low price?
Wow. Yeah, which goes counter to Microsoft and Sony, who always lose money. And because everybody knows that losing money now is the same as making money in the future with the console. And that selling your console at a profit is a sign of fear and uncertainty. So therefore, we probably shouldn't buy a Nintendo. We should go out and buy the Sony and Microsoft products because they lose money.
Especially the Sony product. It's going to cost twice as much as they sell it for.
That was great, John. Thank you.
Well, thanks to Penny Arcade for
okay.
For
that's awesome.
Penny Arcade, great site. PennyArcade.com, yeah, really fun.
A long time.
Okay, next news story. I got time for more? I want more from you guys.
I got a little bit about Atlantis. There was a lot of brouhaha because Atlantis didn't launch for a while.
What's Atlantis?
Atlantis is a shuttle that's in space right now.
Oh, yeah, right.
Okay.
Let's hear the brouhaha.
I just wanted to say that, well, the brouhaha was that, no, it was just, it took it forever to get up there, and it kind of fell out of the news. And they went up, they've been doing spacewalks, they've been putting up parts for the IIS.
Didn't somebody lose a bolt and a spring and a nut and stuff?
Probably.
Didn't it get struck by lightning?
I think that was...
What? No. They put it away because... Oh, yeah. Lightning struck the tower.
The tower, not the...
Before the launch.
Okay.
But not IIS.
So lightning's not going to hit the...
They put up a new solar array.
Yeah.
And they put up a new heat dissipation unit, a radiator, for the solar array. So now new projects that are brought up have an independent source of power from the space station. You know, it's part of the space station, but it's like they have a whole new power grid now. And this is really significant because construction's been stalled since 2003. And so this is like... a big, huge jump start to get construction going again. And I think that's, you know, if you're an ISS fan. Yeah.
Let's bring out this pun really clearly. You just said they added a power source. And it's like a jump start. Thank you. So how are they creating energy?
They put up a new solar array.
And a heat radiator. That's interesting.
To dissipate the heat.
Okay. So now projects that have been stalled since 2002 can continue?
Well, this is the construction of the space station is continuing.
Yeah.
I mean, we had...
Was that lifted in the shuttle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, see, so, the shuttle, the space station was designed with the shuttle in mind. I mean, that's the only thing big enough to get the parts up there. So that's what all the parts have been built around.
And we've been delayed since the accidents.
Right. Okay. So if without the shuttle, all those parts are grounded, and there's been billions of dollars have put into that.
All right.
Cool.
Thank you very much for that.
I do have another story.
Well, you can tell it about it in just a minute.
Okay.
We've got some things to say first. Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in... I already read that. Business with Pleasure is cool. It's in Scotts Valley. Okay, we'll go on. KOSP co-sponsors the Pacific Repertory Opera's presentation of Opera in the Vineyards. John Fellow, opera lovers, in an evening of beautiful music, including selected favorites... Cameron, Barber of Seville, Marriage of Figaro, and many others. Opera in the Vineyards will be Sunday, September 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. with picnicking from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Martin and Weyrich Vineyard Amphitheater in Paso Robles. Bring the whole family or someone special. For more information or tickets, call 805-541-5369 or go online to PROPERA.org. GeekSpeak is supported by Cruzeiro Internet, offering DSL, broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruzeiro has retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruzeiro.com or by calling 459-6301. You're listening to GeekSpeak, the Geeks of Today. Sean, John, I'm Lyle Troxell, and of course, we're taking your calls with questions and comments on technology. Now's the time to pick up the phone and ask us something. The phone numbers are 476-2800, 1-800-476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. We'll take any questions or comments about technology. Again, 476-2800. 476-2800 or 1-800-655-KUSP. Of course, you can send us email. Just go to geekspeak.org with your favorite web browser and click on Contact Us. All right. That's the business at hand. We'll wait for some calls to come in. We'll do your story. Sean?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about BMW and Chevrolet. They've announced their hydrogen vehicles.
Oh.
So the BMW Hydrogen 7 is powered by 191 kilowatt, 260 horsepower, 12-cylinder hydrogen combustion engine. So it does both gas and hydrogen.
Ah, okay.
It accelerates from 0 to 100 kilometers an hour. It's BMW. All these European sites. Duh, what's kilometers? So it can do that in 9.5 seconds. It has a top speed of 143 miles per hour. I love how they switch back and forth.
It's because, it straight it's from because release. That's not a very impressive stat.
I guess not.
So
yeah,
it sounds better if you say from 0 to 100 kilometers per hour instead of 0 to 60.
Right.
Yeah.
It's about the same.
Thank you.
So a vehicle runs on liquid hydrogen and when needed can switch over to premium gasoline. What they say here has a high pressure storage tank that can hold 17.6 pounds of liquid hydrogen. That's good for 125 miles of driving. And then at the touch of a button, you can switch over to a 19.5-gallon gasoline fuel tank for another 300 miles. Wow. Let's talk about a long-distance vehicle.
But you're never going to use the hydrogen because where are you going to fill it up? No one's selling hydrogen. Liquid. Well, not, I mean, you are, but it's extremely expensive. I mean, yeah. It doesn't... So it's like, we're going to sell you this car, which is very cool. And the cool stuff, you can't use. Or maybe you can. Maybe there's enough hydrogen depot stations that you can fill
no
it up.
No one's going to build a station or figure out how to do it if there aren't companies out there willing to put forward the effort to build a car that consumes it. So,
as a geek, I am so
chicken and
anti,
egg thing.
I am so anti-hydrogen system. It's just so ridiculous to
it's
me.
It's too far out there for our current technology.
Yeah, and it's also this whole situation of it's just a storage medium. There's better storage mediums.
Yeah.
And, I mean, go to batteries. I mean,
the problem I see is it takes just as much, if not more, energy to create the hydrogen.
You lose a lot of waste with the transfer. And you're going to create hydrogen basically from electricity. So you got to produce electricity first.
Like the next Prius might be a plug-in vehicle.
Very cool.
Yeah, but you're still
it doesn't matter.
You're still burning resources to produce electricity.
Centralizing power creation, if you will, is much better than distributing it. Because, I mean, true, the current Prius is like a zero-emission vehicle, basically, even though it's burning gas. But the processing plant to produce the gas is expensive. And if you can spend the technology instead of producing all this gasoline and burning the gasoline at different locations, if you can spend all that technology and time and resources to generate more electrical grid, which is pretty strong,
yeah,
it's going to be better for us in general. Electricity is a great source. The only problem is storage is not so hot, and the transfer to hydrogen, it seems to be a bit of waste. There's got to be better ways to do it, like high storage capacitors or better battery technology. But in any case, so I think it's cool that someone's releasing a hydrogen car, but I think it's fluff. I think it's Betamax.
So the Chevrolet Sequel is also petroleum free and will run on hydrogen.
Oh, but they have no petroleum.
They don't really list much about it.
Now, these are just concept cars that they've created. These aren't cars that are currently...
It'll go 60 miles an hour in 10 seconds.
Oh, it's just concept cars?
Right.
Are they releasing?
No, these were concept cars. And
now they're releasing?
Now they're going to release them.
Any word on pricing?
No pricing and no dates. But you can expect that BMW and Chevrolet will be releasing hydrogen vehicles.
You know, the one thing that'd be cool about a hydrogen vehicle is this. You could buy a hydrogen creation system for like your local community, plug it into your grid, everybody shares the expense of actually powering it, feed it in water, and everybody gets gasoline. So you have local community creation, and therefore you're not shipping it. So that's to some degree, I like that idea. But in any case, I'm sure we've got stories. I'm sure we have calls. Oh, we do. Good. So let's go ahead and take...
BMW is going to have their car in 2007.
Oh, it's soon?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, we'll see. Santa Cruz, Ely, welcome. Is it Eli? Let me actually...
Or is it Ellie?
Is it Ellie, Eli?
Eli.
I had an issue, by the way. I can't get on your website today. It crashes IE, I'm running on an old machine right now, and it also crashed Netscape 6.2.
Really?
Maybe, and this is in a Windows 98 first version broken computer, so maybe it doesn't count.
I would say that doesn't count.
No,
but
I
think it worked fine yesterday.
I think it should count. I wonder why. We put some more images up on the homepage. Do you go to a lot of other websites with that browser? All right, well, we're not doing a lot of magic up there. In fact, it looks pretty bad in IE. I guess it's time for a redesign. I think we've been saying this for years.
I was on it yesterday, anyway. I had no problem.
Okay, Eli, is that your name?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your question?
The problem is I have a desktop XP Pro SP1 that suddenly lost its ability to browse the Internet. Pinging by name and by IP address in a command window works fine using that same IP address in a browser. And I've tried Internet Explorer, Netscape, and Firefox. Fails. I've been on the phone with Microsoft for hours.
Why are you using SP1 and not SP2?
Well, because I haven't gotten around to cleaning up enough space on my... This is a six-year-old Dell, and I don't have enough space to upgrade right now.
Okay, so space is an issue. Is there enough space for the browser to actually run effectively? Meaning that if the browser's going to create a lot of cache, it's going to be generating new data all the time as it's used. And if you don't have enough space for that, it can be having problems with that and therefore not doing anything else. So you could have a corrupt... I would assume if you filled up your hard drive, lots of times when you fill up a hard drive, the files that are starting to be written generate crashes from the machine because the applications can't actually write, so it has a problem. And then a file gets corrupted that it actually needs to use. So you probably have a situation like that. It's strange to me that all your browsers are doing this, but I would clear up some space before you continue troubleshooting. Make sure you have at least 50 megs.
Is it that the browsers are crashing whenever you're trying to do
that? No, they just come back with... No, the crashing browsers was on this old Windows 98 with your website.
If you open up a command line...
He can ping. He already pinged.
Did you ping the name or the...
I can ping by name and by IP.
Okay, so, and the browser doesn't... Yeah. Okay. Eli, do you have you messed with your firewall lately?
I've disabled Norton as part of the diagnostics.
Okay, but do you have a local LAN firewall?
No, I'm going through a router, but...
And does the router have any blocking of ports?
I don't think so. And I have other computers in the house that wirelessly are connected to that router, and they're working fine.
Here's the next thing. Ping is a cool thing to do, because what it basically does is, do I have network connectivity? And that's a great first step. The next step you could do is try to manually telnet on port 80 to one of your websites and see if the website gives a response. That means on the port that the web browser is using, do I have connectivity? So what you do is you type telnet and then the name or IP address you want to go to. Just use yahoo.com, telnet, yahoo.com, and then a space and then 80 and hit enter. And see if Yahoo says, I'm ready, or responds to it all. If it does, then a browser should work, and the situation at this point is your browser. Or your computer's ability to load your browser, but it's your browser.
You should, in a command window, telnet yahoo.com :80?
No, not colon, just space 80.
Space 80.
Mm-hmm. You're forcing telnet to run on a non-standard port, which is 80, which is what web browsers use.
And it should come back with something like a 216.109 IP address, somewhere in that range. 216.109.
What else does it say after that?
It says connected yahoo.com escape character.
Yeah, good. And then you could type some stuff in and you could get the web page and all that, but you don't need to do that. So just try that out. And if it's not that, I got to say that the next thing you need to do is unfortunately, to reinstall your browser. But I think that you probably have some corrupt files because of your hard drive filling up. That's just a guess.
Well, they reinstall the browser, and that doesn't lose me any... I just put the CD in and I can reinstall it, or...
The browser or the Windows?
I'm just going to say, you said browser. Am I going to have to reinstall Windows?
First step is to try the browser. But, you know, you're not really going to be able to reinstall Internet Explorer because it's so integral to the operating system. You said you had Firefox. Try this telnet thing. If that doesn't work, Sean, what do you think about this? Think he's got a hosed operating system? The ports are open. He can telnet to the web server. The browsers don't do it. So maybe
are you using an integrated network adapter, or is it a network card?
I have no idea.
You might want to check to see if the drivers are loaded. Maybe if
that's
there are newer
idea.
Drivers, it could be your network adapter.
That means
that's why I say this, because you're having problems with all your browsers.
Right. But there are some DLLs that all the browsers use for SOC connection, right? And one of those could be bad. That's another possibility. Are you checking your email? Is that okay? Is your email coming in okay?
My email is web-based, so I don't...
All right, good luck on those recommendations. I hope that everything goes well.
Okay.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, go to Device Manager and just make sure all your hardware is loaded okay. You're looking for any yellow or red marks in Device Manager. If you see any you want to make, go check those.
From Santa Cruz, Marty, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm interested in the difference between USB 1 and 2. I've noticed that the new 80 gig iPod, will only work on USB 2, it seems, and this Zoom that you just talked about is only USB 2.
Actually, if anyone talks about USB 2, USB 1 will also work, just a lot slower.
That's the main difference between USB 1 and USB 2.
It's backwards compatible.
Right, and the biggest difference between USB 1 and USB 2 is speed. USB 1 is 11 megabits per second. USB 2 is, what, 400 megabits per second?
I don't know the numbers. And also, those numbers aren't
true. Yeah, that's the manufacturer's numbers.
A lot faster.
Mileage may vary.
Well, in reading about the new iPod, the 80 gig iPod, it says that it'll only work on USB 2. Is that not true? It'll just be really slow.
I don't think that's true. I think it would work.
Okay.
But I got to say that if you've just got USB 1 and an 80 gig drive,
USB
you got
1,
some problems.
It transfers at about 1.5 megabytes per second if you're
so
lucky.
It's going to take you hours.
Whereas USB 2 is more around 30, 40.
You think 30?
Well, okay, so they're supposed to be 40 megabytes.
Okay.
But I'm talking about real world here. So if you're transferring songs that are 8, 9 megabytes in size, USB 1 is going to take you a long time.
A long time. Okay, so how do you upgrade? What kind of computer do you have?
iMac G4 flat panel.
Nope.
Can't do it.
It's got USB 2. An iMac flat panel's got USB 2. I wouldn't worry about it.
My machine says it doesn't. When I look at about this machine.
Wait a second. You've got an iMac. Describe
G4.
It for me. Is it a lamp?
It's the dome with the screen above it.
Yeah, those were
the lamp.
Yeah, the iLamp. Those were before
lamp,
some of those were before USB 2.
Some of those were before.
So you got it. You saw that. You got it pretty early on.
The only thing you could possibly do is try to find someone who's, and this is just, not going to be true. Try to find someone that's selling a FireWire to USB 2 adapter that's drivers work for a Mac. That's the only connection to that computer that's fast enough to support USB 2.
It would be problematic, though.
It would be problematic, and I wouldn't really do it. And, yeah. The next thing is try to find someone else that gets one of these new iPods and test it on your computer.
Yeah.
It works.
Okay. But the physical configuration of 1 and 2 is the same?
Yes. You'll be able to plug it in.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marty.
Yeah, the first three iMac flat panels that were released were all
I'm surprised.
Lamps. Yeah. No USB 2.
Okay, next one.
We got a lot of calls.
We do. Salinas Mikaela, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
What's your question today?
I don't think it's terribly technical. It seems that wine got spilled on my husband's laptop at some point last night.
I hope you had a good time last night.
I guess he did. I was in bed, so I don't know.
How much wine?
This is why
It seems kind of significant. I cleaned it up as much as I could, but there was a lot coming out of the touchpad and around the keyboard.
Was it on at the time?
Now, that I don't know. If it was on and it happened, he probably turned it off really quickly.
Is it on anymore?
let it dry over the weekend.
Okay.
Give it time,
And unplug the battery from it.
Yeah, take the battery out.
I'm just worried about
unplug
it getting
it.
Sticky.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I've dumped a whole cup of coffee with creamer and sugar, back when you took it that way, into my Gateway notebook. And this was a review unit from Gateway when I worked at Maximum TC Magazine.
Did you write a review? It works with coffee.
It's funny. I drained it, and it drained out of the speaker holes in the bottom corner. It was great. It was in there. And I put a fan on it for a few days, just under my desk, and then it booted right up.
Yeah.
My only problem I had was the keys. I had to work on the keys, but they eventually all came back.
That's the most important.
And I offered Gateway, I said, this is great. I don't think they wanted to talk about the liability involved.
The most important thing, though, is to make sure that it dries out completely. Like Sean was saying, put a fan on it.
Yeah.
What kind of laptop is it?
It's a Dell Inspiron.
How hard is it to remove the keyboard on those?
I don't know.
If it's possible, look to see if there's any catches around the keyboard. And if it's possible to just simply
You know what I would do is call Dell. And of course,
they're closed
you.
All weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing.
But
unplug the battery.
I'm sure they've seen this before, and they could tell you exactly with that model what you could do to clean, make sure the keyboard gets clean or any other part
of
the notebook.
But here's, let's do some safety stuff first. You have a contaminant inside there that's going to slow down cooling. It's going to make components not burn off energy as much. Everything's going to get coated inside there. When the liquid is in liquid form, it will transfer electricity, and that's the danger. That's why you want it to dry thoroughly.
Right.
Once it's dried thoroughly, it won't transfer electricity, most likely.
But it could act as an insulator.
But it can act as an insulator, and then you've got components maybe overheating. And if the fans get damaged, and the fans don't actually rotate, and they're very small on laptops, then you're going to have a problem with air, and it's going to overheat, and you're going to have a machine crashing all the time.
There's also a potential it could get into the optical drive.
Well, is there a way to take it somewhere where they can open it and kind of clean it out better than I can do here?
Yeah, you could get somebody to open it, but I say you just have a couple more glasses of wine.
I was terrible thing. It was $2 check.
Yeah, it was. So it's even cheap wine. Oh, man.
It wasn't even good wine.
that might be for your benefit. What I recommend in the future, use a tumbler instead of a wine glass because they're much more stable.
That's true. Yeah. I think I'll get some.
And then put the wine on the left side so the mouse, if you're right-handed, so the mouse doesn't hit it. But that's if you're using a side mouse. I think that's it for
when
us.
When you drink, put the notebook in a high spot.
Don't drink and compute.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the call. Good luck.
That's
thank you.
Worth rinsing. Get out while it before it dries. What do you?
That just sounds wrong.
It's already wet.
No, don't do it.
On and on, I would consider that. After what I went through with the keyboard, because your keys, some of my keys didn't work for a long time, and then all of a sudden, hey, my H works now. It was like that, and that's what you're going to go through.
Was that a pun? Hey, my H works now.
You type it. I just remember
if you're going to do that.
It took a couple weeks before
what you
want to
do
back.
Is first dry it completely with the wine in it. See if it works okay. If it works okay, don't do anything else. Then if it doesn't work okay, call around to people that might be able to help you, find out how much money it's going to cost, and then make the decision whether you want to rinse the water through it. But if you do that, make sure you don't have a battery in it and it's not plugged in. In fact, make sure it hasn't been plugged in for a couple hours and hit a few buttons so that it's discharged all its capacitors.
Maybe give Santa Cruz Electronics a call.
Yeah, and I don't
sure
recommend doing any of the stuff that I just suggested.
Oh,
okay, Salinas.
Yeah.
So whoever the electronics store is in Salinas. All right, from Santa Cruz, Johnny?
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. Hello. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank
I just
you.
Spilled my coffee cup all over the table. So go on.
I have an iTunes sync question. I have four hard drives with my music spread over all of them and with a lot of overlap on each drive. So the same tunes are on each drive. Some of the same tunes. And I've got a new hard drive, a nice 100 gig hard drive, and I want to put it all on one hard drive. I use.
So what's the question? Are all these different libraries of iTunes? Or?
Yeah, they're different libraries of iTunes. I want to find a good sync program to sync it all up.
Okay, what I would do is if they're really truly the same songs, the directory structure in iTunes will be the same on all of them. So meaning that the artist name will be the root folder for a specific artist, right? And
right.
On each of them, the albums will be the same and the songs will be the same. So now, if you take your new drive, which is going to be blank, and you manually from the file system copy all of them over saying yes to override, you will have a collection of all your music without duplicates. Then what you do is you remove your iTunes library definition file, if you will, and have it rescan just that 100 gig drive. It'll recreate the file for you, the library and everything. You will lose some information. You'll lose how much you've played the songs. You'll lose playlists and some other things. So it's kind of dangerous. If you don't want to lose that information, I think you can erase all your songs from your iTunes after you've copied them to a new drive and rescan. And that's the way to do it. Just think of these files as files in your these MP3s or songs, whatever, as files on your computer that have the same name. And if you put them all in the same place, they'll overwrite each other. And if you say yes, you'll be okay. Just be very careful about this because you do not want to erase your only copy of something.
I know. Okay. And then how do I take all the, if I'm understanding you right, I should take all the tunes out of my iTunes directory? How do I do that?
Okay, so one thing I'm confused about is how you have iTunes seeing things on multiple drives. Do you know how you do that?
Well, I've got...
do you have multiple installs of iTunes?
I've got iTunes on two computers and then iTunes on a backup disk.
Okay, I gotcha. Okay, so what you want to do is you want to erase the file that says, tells iTunes it even has a library.
Uh-huh.
And you don't erase that. You move it somewhere else. Then iTunes will boot up. It'll see, oh, no one's telling me what to do. That means I'm running this for the first time. I'll create those files. And then it will say, do you want me to scan for music on your computer? And you have to tell it where to scan for music. And then you'll be, you're basically starting iTunes over again.
Right.
Good luck.
So basically, okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. All right, we're going to go to Santa Cruz again. John, welcome to GeekSpeak. Hello, John. Are you with us today?
Yeah.
What's your question?
Hey, I'm in rural area Soquel.
Okay.
And SurfNet couldn't get me high-speed connectivity, and I'm too far from the switch to get DSL. So what do you guys recommend as the current best high-speed connection when you're out in the boonies?
Do you have cable available to you?
I'm out in the boonies.
So no cable television?
Oh, AT&T offered to put it in, but they charge $150,000 to install it.
$150,000?
Oh, yeah, I think it would cover the whole neighborhood.
So generous of them. How many neighbors do you have? You guys can raise that kind of money?
Yeah, exactly. I just send out a gift card to all my neighbors.
Do you have line of sight to high mountains?
Some, but SurfNet came up, and they wanted me to put their receiver on something that was probably about 15 or 20 feet tall above the ridge line.
Uh-huh. And can you do that?
Yeah, I can, but it's kind of unwieldy and gets into guy wires and all kinds of weird stuff. So I'd rather know if there's any other options.
Do you like moving?
Direct PC or anything like that? Yeah, do I like moving?
Their satellite connections are expensive and they're not, in my opinion, not very good.
Okay.
Do you have a laptop? Find a favorite coffee shop and have a laptop. That's another option. No.
I love it, Lyle. You're helping.
You're stuck.
A big lot here. You're just helping a lot.
Hey, I'm trying, John.
Lyle and I have both been in this boat before, and it's a pain.
It's
he had ISDN.
Boat.
Yeah, you can buy dual ISDN. Get 128 megabits, and it's expensive.
And I had 28K connection and suffered with it until Comcast was available.
And I recall the time when I went, I have cable. I can get cable. And I called John. I think we both laughed hysterically. I'm not really sure, but
that was a happy week for
that
you.
Was a happy, yeah. That was a happy 6 months. And then we moved and we were able to get DSL, so we got DSL because we don't actually watch television. But you got to wait for somebody to move in. Is your neighborhood tempting to a cable company?
No. It's just not worth the infrastructure cost, I'm sure, to them.
Well, you've done all the you've done the things that I would suggest. The next thing is, if you really want it, you can get dual ISDN. You might have to convince your phone company to do it, but it's not very fast. And then the next thing would be satellite.
What's the speed?
128 megabit.
So it's about twice as fast as a
And what's the equipment that I need, and who do I need to get the service provided from?
Well, that's kind of difficult, actually. You want to get a local ISP that will help you and know how to do this. What I mean by local ISP is somebody that's been offering dial-up service since before the big boys were doing it, right?
So we're talking about Cruise.io?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
And then
okay.
You say, I want to do this service. Now, I don't know if Cruise.io will do it or not.
Does it cost money? I remember when I was surfing at your house, you'd say, well, this is costing me pennies right now.
Yeah, it was like 3 cents per minute, yeah. And then it was also a monthly fee that was like, I can't recall how much it was, but it
costs expensive.
Money.
Yeah.
But it depends on the packages. So, but what you have to do is you have to get a high phone connection to your house. You're basically doing a dual pair phone connection just for the
ISDN. Internet connection.
Yeah. And then you can switch to one leg of it and still use your phone. But the thing is, nobody's doing it much anymore. And then you have to get an ISDN modem. I have an ISDN modem. I'll give it to you. So that,
how
that
does,
steps
you know, no, that's great, Lyle. I'll come by your house and get it. But how do I guess the question is, does it go fast enough at 128 to do VoIP or not?
Ooh, I wouldn't count
well,
on
no,
that.
Well, we were doing, yeah, no, yes, you can do ISD and you can do video chat, actually. I was doing video chat with people down in Los
Angeles. How shuddery was it?
It was bad.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember it being
great. I wouldn't say that VoIP is going to be beautiful, like, you know, better than phone, like VoIP can be. It'll be bad. But, you know, you're stuck in a location that's like that. The other thing to do, of course, is check out the satellite service. And, you know, they might try to convince you and it might work for you. And the problem with it is it's got some delay, so you're going to have, like, a delayed phone conversation.
Yeah, the satellite, also the uploads are slow as molasses. The downloads, obviously, are high speed. Right,
right. Upload, right. You're still restricted to a dial-up connection.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Thank you very much for the call. We're going to go on to the next.
Thanks, bye.
All right. I think we should go on to...
Gene?
I think we should do...
Oh,
no,
Richard.
No, Josh from Santa Cruz. Hi, Josh.
Richard was next.
Richard, stick with us. Josh, what's your question?
I'm trying to get to my work computer from my home computer through VPN or just FTP, and I'm not sure how to go about doing it.
So you want to use remote access?
Yeah, basically, I'm going to, you know, be, my wife's giving birth to a baby soon, so I'll be working at home.
Right, right.
Congrats.
And I want to get access to my work computer, and they're both on dynamic IPs and behind firewalls.
And you emailed us about this question.
Yeah, I emailed you guys a couple times.
Yeah. Okay.
So and, it's not easy because of the whole the dynamic IP.
I know. I signed up with an account with DNS.
Yeah, dyndns.org.
Yeah. But I'm also realizing that since
you need
like
that both ways. Yeah.
Yeah, I probably will do like two domain names.
Thing is, this email, this problem is quite complicated, and doing it on air, we can't do it justice. Through the emails, the better.
Oh, it's even tough to read.
Does
your company support?
No.
Is this your company?
Pardon me?
Is this your company, or?
I do the IT there, basically, so.
You're the IT guy? You can do it then. So.
Abracadabra.
Yeah, you could pay for an upgrade to your service to get a static IP address, but I don't think a dynamic IP address is even going to work that well for you, but I'm not sure.
Even if I do the two, like a 2.14 ones that follow the IP?
No, we can do that, but then you're asking your VPN service to...
A VPN service is nice because it establishes the connection, and it takes care of the IP addresses, and then you can remotely access to your computer through your VPN. That might be the way to go. Don't ask me how to set up a VPN connection.
We don't.
I've used them.
Josh, I'm sorry. We're just not going to be able to help you out.
Yeah, it's
denied.
I'm so sorry. Good luck.
No problem.
If anyone wants to help out Josh with setting a VPN so he can work from home because he's about to have a new baby, and it's definitely a good cause. I like the idea of him being around his child.
Yeah.
It's a good time to do it. Please let us know. We have his email account, and we'd be happy to hook you up to him, and you can help him out. So go to geekspeak.org, and hopefully someone can help Josh out, set up his network. And actually, Chris is next. So, Chris, what's your question today?
That would be me.
Yes, please. Go on.
I'm having a problem with... some files I have over here in my shared files location, and I can't seem to erase them. They come back every single day to haunt me.
Is it the computer that they're actually on? Are you erasing it from there?
Yes, and I'm running Windows XP.
Hmm.
And I go in there and I uncheck read only, so I see if I can do that. I've tried erasing with different methods, Gutman and pseudo random data. I've dragged them over to the recycle bin and exploded the recycle bin. I've done everything, and they come back to
that. Sean, do you have a suggestion for this? Erasing files from your computer, having trouble erasing them?
So, it gives you an error message?
No, they're just there the next day.
And it's on a shared drive.
And it's in, I accidentally moved them over to shared files.
Well, try moving them before you delete them, and then see what happens. If moving them outside of that space...
I actually tried that with Secure Erase.
This is another one. Can you stay on the line? We'll try to help you out right after GeekSpeak. Just stay with us, please.
Righto.
Or actually call back, if you would. The Geeks this morning, John Tracy, Sean Cleveland. Answering the phones is Rick Philman, as he is every week. And to you, thank you for listening to GeekSpeak. To those that called in, thank you for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, I'd just be us geeking out. And who wants to listen to that? GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxel. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Auto, streaming live and podcasting at kosp.org.